Rick. Okay, we are beginning the third chapter of Makos. So that puts us just about a little more than halfway through.
There's only three chapters.
So we started after Pesach, so we're in line, Mirz Hashem, to finish this before Pesach, as was our goal. And now we're finally getting to the chapter upon which this Masechta is named with lashes. The Mishnah begins with a discussion of the various sins that people do that gives them lashes. Okay? Now, the truth of the matter is there's many more than what the Mishnah will list. And as the commentary here says, because we know basically anything that says thou shalt not, and you know, you get lashed for it unless it's a law of shame or mice, etc., etc. But the Mishnah is listing things that have an insight that you might not have thought would get lashed, or some other insight that's there. And that's, look at the first three words, ve'elu hein halokim, and these are the ones that receive lashes. Usually when it says ve'elu, and these, it means these and nothing else, and therefore there are other things that maybe are not mentioned because they don't get lashed. But that's not true. The point that they're brought is they're teaching us a chiddush. Okay, for example, as we will have a lengthy discussion on this next week, let's say a punishment that comes with kares. Right? Certain averos, if you're warned, you get kares. So they list a whole bunch that get kares to say even though they're punishable by kares, they also carry the punishment of lashes, which is going to be a whole discussion that's coming up over there. And there'll be other reasons why certain ones are brought. So therefore, the fact that it says these are the ones that get lashed, it doesn't mean only these, but these are the ones where there's an insight in telling you that they get lashed. So here comes the list over here, and you can see many of these are kares ones right away. Number one, haba al achosa, someone who has relations with his sister. Okay? Now, commentary says, although the Mishnah mentions only that the male partner in unions with relatives or Anita incurs punishment, the same applies to the female. So don't think it's just the male, the female as well. Someone has relations with his sister. Okay, who else does it get? You'll have to see how that gets lashed. The Gemara is going to have a whole discussion. Like, what are we warning him, for example? Right? If it's a kares-bearing avera, so isn't the guy warning him, don't do this or you're going to get kares? Right, so there'll be a whole discussion of that. That's going to be coming up in the Gemara.
There's no death penalty for
Achot? Not everyone carries death penalty. We will see, and that's another issue. What about death penalty issues? Mm-hmm. That's going to be a whole discussion, Mishnah right now is discussing the kares ones that's happening over here. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, Valachos Aviv. Someone has relations with his father's sister. Valachosimo, and someone has relation with his mother's sister. Valachosishto, and someone has relations with his wife's sister. Va'al eshes achiv, or someone has relations with the person's brother's wife. Right? Now that is, look at the prohibition. A person may not cohabit with his brother's wife, even if she is subsequently divorced or widowed, except in the case of Yibum. Same applies to prohibition against cohabiting with other relatives' wives, forbidden in the Torah. While the wives are still married, they are also forbidden under the more serious prohibition of adultery.
That's right.
The sister of one's wife, however, is prohibited as long as one's wife is alive. So there's different times where you apply this. Val Eshes Achi Aviv, and someone has relations with the wife of his father's brother. Okay. Val Hanita, one has relations with a woman who's Anita, regardless of it's his wife or not his wife. Okay. Almana L'Kohen Gadol, similarly, if a Kohen Gadol marries a widow, right? Now, let's see here. The Mishnah includes this prohibition in order to introduce the next segment, which is that if a Kohen Gadol cohabits with a widow who's also a divorcee. In other words, there's not a big chiddush for Almana to Kohen Gadol, But the point is, the next point, which is grusha v'chalutza l'kohen hedyot. If a woman is divorced or she received chalitza to a regular kohen, not a kohen gadol, that also carries the lashes punishment. Okay, the Rambam rules concerning unions forbidden only in pain of malchus, that malchus is not incurred for that prohibition unless the parties are married to each other. Thus, an ordinary kohen who cohabits with a divorcee who is not his wife is not liable to malchus for that prohibition. It's a marriage. You're cohabiting after marriage, just regular cohabitation, which is nus, but you're not being married to her. The exception is a kohen gadol, who is liable to malchus if he cohabits with a widow, even if he is not married to her. Okay, Ravid argues on that distinction. Fine. So there's a machlokas of that as well. Okay, fine. Now, what about the idea of the chalutza? When it mentions the chalutza, right, the woman who received chalitza instead of the mitzvah of yibum, right? So that's a kohen gadol, a regular kohen, marries a chalutza. So it's interesting. The Torah says, "V'isha grusha me'isha lo yikechechu." A woman who's a divorcee from her husband, kohanim shall not marry. Only says a divorcee. It doesn't say anybody about chalitza, right? The word v'isha and a woman, which seems unnecessary, because you can just say grusha. Why say an isha grusha? Certainly a woman, someone's a grusha is a woman. Mm-hmm. What do you just say? Ve grusha meisha. A grusha, a divorcee. Yeah. Now, you have to say a woman who's a divorcee? So the next word, woman, they add the word, the chalutza one. Okay, so therefore it would appear from Rashi that the chalutza is biblically forbidden. But the Gemara in Kiddushin seems to have something rabbinically forbidden. Fine. So the difference will be what kind of lashes you get. Do you get biblical lashes or rabbinic lashes? It doesn't really matter. It hurt the same. But same idea. All right. So that gets lashes as well, if you're warned for that. Mamzeres unesina Yisrael. What if a regular Jew marries a mamzeres, someone who's not allowed to come into the Jewish nation? That's a product of an adulterous relationship or forbidden relationship. And also a Nesina. Now, Nesina, remember, these were people who were descendants of the Givonim. Remember, the Givonim, one of the Canaanite nations, and they tricked the Jews into saying that they came from out of the country. They weren't Canaanim. And they made a peace treaty with the Jews. And once they made the peace treaty, then afterwards the Jews found out they weren't supposed to make a peace treaty with them. They were the Givonim. So it was done under false pretenses. So after they found out, so Yeshua punished them, and he said you have to become woodcutters and water drawers, and therefore the Givonim are known as the Nesinim. Nesinim means the assigned ones. Mm-hmm. They were assigned this term that they're going to be punished, that they have water cutters, wood choppers, and water cutters. Now, although the Givonim converted to Judaism, they could not intermarry with other Jews because of the biblical prohibition against marrying the seven Canaanite nations, where it says you shall not get married to them. So that's how Rashi understands that and holds that Nesinim are biblically prohibited. It's Machlokas again, maybe another place seems they're rabbinically prohibited, etc. So we can't marry them as Canaanite nations, not necessarily as Goyim, okay, because they converted them under false pretenses. So we not allowed to marry a Nesin. Okay, fine.
But if he converts under normal...
A regular convert is fine, but here
okay,
they,
doesn't matter if
they made a false pretense.
Yeah, okay.
Right? So therefore you can't marry them. Or the... Now, interesting why it reverses it now. Every other one we didn't reverse it, because the other way it would apply as well. But it's just saying the opposite. Bas Yisrael, a Jewish woman who marries a male Nesin and a mamzer, so it goes both ways. Next, Almana. Now, the
who
point.
Who gets the lashes in that case?
They both do. They're prohibited. I mean, I imagine. Or for sure, for sure. Well, for sure, really, I don't know about the. Well, the moms are also can't come in. That's a good question. I would assume they both would.
Women get lashes.
What? Women get? Why not? Why can't women get lashes? They can't. Equal rights.
Yeah, women get.
They went with stamps.
What if a woman kills somebody?
Yeah, sure.
Right.
They'll never withstand as many as the
So women. Maybe they only assign them less, but they get.
Okay, that's long.
Okay, now, what about, let's go back to the Kohen Gadol. What if the Kohen Gadol marries a woman who's an almana and a grusha? She was married twice before.
Oh, okay.
She was widowed, married another man, divorced, or vice versa. The Kohen marries her, Kohen Gadol is the third husband.
Well.
So now she has two stigmas against her vis-a-vis the Kohen Gadol. So guess what? Here's the Chiddush. Chayavim olam. No. Let's try it again. Chayavim olam mishum shnei shemos. She gets lashed for both commandments. You get two sets of malchus. Right? Even though the pasuk says amuna agrusha and amuna agrusha, you cannot marry. It's one clause, but each woman is considered a separate avera. So therefore, it has its own penalty. Okay, so therefore the Kohen Gadol will get lashed twice under that circumstance.
But will he have that tafkid of being a Kohen Gadol if he has done such a sin?
Will he have the what?
Like, you know, he's got, like, he's the Kohen Gadol.
Would you want him to be a Kohen Gadol?
He cannot continue to be a Kohen Gadol, right? If he gets married.
He's going to have to divorce her, but he married her, he lived with her, they told him not to. It's obviously not the best Kohen Gadol in the world, right?
Because he should know all this. So you can't do it.
Yeah.
Nobody would be married before you.
Okay. I'm sure he knew all this. They only could lash him if he knew all this.
What?
If he still maintains, okay, then they have to decide if they want to keep him as a Kohen Gadol. Okay, sometimes he didn't have a choice. Depends what the Romans said. Okay. Now, so that's if it was a Alamona and a Grusha. Okay? On the other hand, Grusha v'chalutza, what if a regular Kohen is with a woman who is a divorcee from man number one and a chalutza from man number two? All right? She was married to one man. He divorced her. Married another man. He died. Didn't have kids. The brother gave her a chalitza. Okay? And now she marries a regular Kohen. So again, we have two names over here, but here, Ein Chayev Ela Mishum Achas Bilvad. They're only Chayev for one prohibition. Why? Because even though Chalitza could even be biblical, but it wasn't explicitly mentioned in the Torah, as we said. We only learned from the next word, Isha. So then it's really derived from the divorcee prohibition. In other words, it's like a subcategory of a divorcee. You can see the difference. A widow and a divorcee is two different categories. One, the husband died. One, the husband is alive. And they just separated from each other. So a chalutza is very much like a divorcee. I mean, she's usher to a Kohen just like a divorced woman. Let's say a woman's been divorced twice.
Oh, definitely.
All right. So how many times did the Kohen get lashed?
Once.
Again, a woman...
They got before.
One second.
We do.
Careful now. A woman gets divorced once, she gets divorced twice.
Right.
Now she marries a regular Kohen. How many lashes would a regular Kohen get?
One.
Yeah. Because you can't... She's not any more a divorcee if she's divorced once or twice.
Yes.
But the other case, we said he gets two sets of lashes.
What was that? That was a widow.
A widow
is a different term than a divorcee.
That was a Kohen Gadol.
A widow also was divorced first. He gets two sets of lashes.
Because a widow is a different category than a divorcee.
If she marries again, doesn't she lose that status?
It's different than, no.
But you get lashes either way. So
no, but,
okay.
But it's obviously a difference. A woman whose husband died versus a woman whose husband divorced her is a totally different category.
But the case in the Gemara,
right? We understand that. One is, there was nothing, she had no choice. God killed her husband. Finished. The other one, divorce, is a different category altogether. They chose to not be married together anymore. The husband's still alive. So those are two separate names. That's why Kohen Gadol would get two separate lashes, because there's two separate prohibitions. On the other hand, a divorcee, so again, let's say a woman got divorced twice. Well, she's a woman who's divorced once, or the woman who's divorced twice, or three times, or 10 times, is still called a divorcee.
Yeah, multiple.
So you're carrying only one prohibition of a divorcee. What if a woman had two husbands who died?
Yes.
She's still just one widow.
Yeah.
Carries one thing. So therefore we're saying now, if she's a divorcee and a chalutza, well, a chalutza is really just another form of a divorcee.
Fair enough.
Therefore, it only has one name for that. Okay, so that was the first grouping, and that grouping had to do with forbidden relationships. It's all part of the forbidden relationships activities. Now we're going to other activities that the Torah says you're not allowed to do. Okay, now, interesting. So again, these are ones that would normally get kares, but we're throwing in malchus as well. Hatame shochalas hakodesh, a tummy person who eats sacrificial foods. A korban, for example. If you are tummy, you cannot eat a korban, right? Let's see, there's a general rule that every biblical punishment sin must have a scriptural source for the basic prohibition. This is known as ashara, a warning, etc. We're going to see the Torah talks about and gives us warnings for these. As with the Gemara, we have a long discussion of there's a punishment, there's a warning. Remember, you need to have a warning for all these. If you don't have a warning, how do you punish him? Right? So therefore, and that's where the lav comes in over here. So that's so we see, if you look in Sefer Vayikra, it shows you the warning that you're not allowed to eat. A tummy person can't even touch him. Okay, also, Fahabo El Hamikdash Tummy. If a person is in a state of tum and he walks into the base of Migdash, he'll get lashed. These all also are kares punishable. Vochal Chalev, a person who eats forbidden animal fats. Okay, there are permissible animal fats called Shuman, and there's forbidden animal fats. Okay, so those are the ones that are not allowed to be eaten. So forbidden chalev are those fats of kosher animals whose counterparts in sacrificial animals were placed on the mizbeach. In other words, if it was a korban, that would be put on the mizbeach. So the ones that are not korbanos, those are the particular types of fats that were forbidden, and you have to have a good education and knowing exactly which fats are those fats as well as the regular fats. Not all fat is prohibited to be eaten. Mm-hmm. It's specific fats that were brought as a korban on the mizbech. Those are the ones that were never allowed to eat, even if it's not a korban. What else you're not allowed to eat? Vidam and blood. If you have blood, you get lashed. Vinosar. Nosar means a korban that has a specific time frame in which it had to be eaten as a korban or burnt up. And now it passed that time frame. So that's called nosar, leftover. You get kares for that. Upigal. Pigal doesn't really have a good English translation, though it says here abomination. Pigal is when a kohen is doing avoda in the base of Mingdash with a korban. And during one of the four critical stages of bringing the korban, such as the slaughtering or the sprinkling of the blood, whatever, during those stages, he has a thought that would render the, even though he didn't do anything wrong, he had a thought that was forbidden to have, such as when he was shechting the animal, he says, you know, I'm going to shech this animal, and I plan on eating the animal after the time when you're not allowed to eat it. Right? He has certain thoughts. So these are bad thoughts to have. Now, what happens is that animal becomes pigle, carries a separate prohibition besides anything else. You're supposed to just get rid of it, burn it up, and
no one would know that unless he
that's
comes
right.
and admits it.
That's right. You have to know.
What if a thought comes into his head, just pops into his head?
Popping in is one thing, but advancing it, right? So, right, that's the details. During the kohen's performance of any of the four blood services, which is slaughtering, receiving the blood, taking it to the mizbech, and sprinkling the blood. Those are the four critical acts. He had the intent of eating the sacrificial meat or burning a sacrificial part on the altar after the time allotted by the Torah. Right? For example, a kohen received the blood of a shlamim offering with the intent that its meat should be eaten for 3 days rather than prescribed two. This intent disqualifies the offering immediately as pigel, even if the kohen's improper intent is never carried out. He didn't even do it. He just thought. You still now. The kohen doesn't get any punishment for that. For having the pigel thought. What he did was he rendered the animal unfit. So now anyone else, it could be the kohen too, but anybody who eats this meat now would get kares. Now obviously only if they knew it was pigle. So you're right, Tony. If the kohen never told us what he was thinking and nobody knew what he was thinking, we can't give anybody kares for that, except the kohen, because he knew what he was thinking. So let's say a random Yisrael eats this animal offering, didn't know any better, he does not get kares. Okay, the question then is, though, maybe he has to bring a korban chatas if he finds out afterwards. That's a different issue. So we're talking about where a person knows that the animal is pigle, was warned not to eat the pigle, and he eats the pigle. Then he's going to get lashed for that. Okay, next. And vitame, or when a korban is tame, and a person eats it when it's tame. Right? Korban can become tame. Let's say after you slaughtered the animal, it became tame. A dead rodent fell on the animal. Whatever. Became tame. Well, now you got to just burn it, and Jew goes and eats it. All right? Now, also, you must sacrifice the animal within the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, and you cannot, that animal, once it's sanctified, is not supposed to leave. Once it's been slaughtered and it's in the Azor, it's not supposed to be taken out. So, what if a hashochet, what if someone slaughters, or umale, or offers up, bachutz, an animal outside of the Beis HaMikdash? So let's say you've designated, this is a korban shlamim. And what does he do? He shechts it outside of the Azor. Or let's say he offers it, this animal as a sacrifice outside of the temple. You can't do that. The Torah says, beware for yourself lest you offer up your olah sacrifice at any place that you see. So the pasuk warns against offering up the sacrifice, meaning burning the fats and the meat outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, interesting, the warning against slaughtering a sacrifice outside the temple is not stated explicitly in the Torah, but it's also usher. Anyway, so taking in a korban and dealing with it outside, processing it as a korban outside the Beis HaMikdash, will get you lashes. Also, va'ochel chametz b'Pesach, eating chametz on Pesach, gets lashes. Va'ochel va'ose melacha b'Yom HaKippurim, person who does work on Yom Kippur, or he eats on Yom Kippur, gets lashed. Va'mefatem. No, what's going on here? Try it again. V'mefatin es hashemen. We know there was a special anointing oil that Moshe was commanded to make, that when you want to have a new item become holy to be used in the Beis HaMikdash, you anoint it with oil. Also, you anointed a Kohen with that. So it was a special mixture. Different ingredients made up this oil. The Torah says you're not allowed to make a replica mixture just for your own purposes. Okay, whatever the specific ingredients of this oil was, you're not allowed to do that. So that's what it says with the exact formula. It could be, if it's a little bit off, that's okay. But the precise ingredients of that, for your own mundane use, you're not allowed to do that.
No copy. Okay. So these don't get karet, but...
No, these are all kares. That's the whole point.
So even these are all kares. Eating on Kippur...
gets kares.
So suppose somebody is really very elderly and cannot fast.
It's very no. It's if you're doing it willfully transgressing. If you're sick, you're allowed to eat on Yom Kippur.
Okay.
If you're sick, you can drive in a car and Shabbos at a hospital. Sickness overrides everything. But if the person is a healthy person and the guy says, you know, it's Yom Kippur, you're about to have a piece of bread. Yeah, I know it's Yom Kippur. You know, you're not allowed to eat a piece of. Yeah, I know I'm not allowed to eat a piece. I want to do it anyway. Hey, you're going to get kares for that. Yeah. Now you also will get lashed. Again, we're leaving out what's the circumstances. You know, you get kares and lashed, or just kares. We have to discuss.
The rule that we get is more severe penalty.
That's a whole discussion that's coming. A very complicated discussion is coming.
A lot of places that you can get kares.
You can get a lot of kares. There's a mesechus called Krisus. It's one of the it's the one they're doing in Daf Yomi now. A small Talmudic tractate. It's called Krisus. There's about 36 or so punishments that come specifically with kares. All right? And if you do them intentionally, you get kares. Unintentionally, you bring a korban chatas. So the question is, you can get lashed. What if they're warning him not to do it? Remember, you'll see, a lot of these things don't need a warning, though. And you have to understand, kares does not necessarily need a warning, because what if the guy knows he's not allowed to do it?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you got to warn him because he doesn't know.
Yeah.
Let's say the guy did not know you can't eat on Yom Kippur. He didn't know. What do you want from the guy? Okay, you bring a korban chatas afterwards. So sometimes you need a warning only for the fact that the guy knows. Okay, remember, it's different than, let's say, a death penalty. A death penalty, even though he knows you're not allowed to kill, you can only execute him if he's been duly warned. Okay. Kares does not need that necessarily.
Okay.
If you know it's Yom Kippur, remember, it's not that they're going to kill you. Kares is unique because the Bezdin does not decree kares on you. Because
right.
The Bezdin only decrees things that they're going to execute.
Right.
If they say you killed someone intentionally, they have to execute you. If they say you stole from this guy, we need witnesses to this, they're going to execute the punishment if he has to pay back. If they have to give the guy lashes, you'll need that. You'll need to have a warning. You have to have proof. But what about regular kares? A guy knows on Yom Kippur he's not allowed to eat bread. He knows for sure he's not allowed. He's intentionally doing it. He's going to get kares anyway, even if he doesn't get warned. Because it's nothing. Bezin does not execute a kares punishment. Kares means God's going to kill you early. God's going to excise you from the relationship with him. It's not up to a Bezdin to enforce kares. You can't. It's not enforceable. It's
and there's no
right? You understand?
Yeah.
You don't need Bezdin to say, we hereby say you are getting kares. Doesn't work that way. If a person knows himself, that's enough to get the kares. So the question is going to be where the lashes comes in over here.
Somebody has to decide when and how he gets
it. So for lashes, you're going to have witnesses and warning and all those other things. So that's where these things can come into play to be discussed in the Gemara that's coming up.
So Rabbi, one more question.
Yeah.
So like somebody knows that should not eat on Kippur. For example, I'm just taking that example.
Yes.
Okay? And ate.
Yes.
So he gets curry.
Yes.
Afterwards, he understands all this. So first he was just crazy. He was crazy. And now he's become...
He's doing tshuva.
Yeah. So there is tshuva so for curry.
You can get tshuva for anything.
Okay.
Get tshuva for curries too. Exactly how you get that, that's a whole story. You know, what's going to happen. You get tshuva on any avera that you do. All right. So we're doing a replica of your cup. You're making a replica of the anointing oil. Also, we have a similar prohibition from the Fatima Sekatoris. This is a special incense offering that was made from a mixture of various incense. You can't replicate that incense offering. Also, carries the punishment. Also, that anointing oil can only be used for holy purposes. To anoint a coin, to anoint utensils. What if a guy decides he wants to just have a nice spa treatment? A person who anoints himself, even though he didn't make it, so that also comes with that punishment. Also, ochal nevelos, person who eats nevela. Nevela is an animal that is killed or died without a proper shechita. Or let's say, right, a proper shechita. You shot an animal, and now you eat it. That's a nevela. Now, if an animal is kosher slaughtered, it's not a nevela. On the other hand, even if it's kosher slaughtered, then you open it up and find out that the internal organs were no good. That's a different prohibition, and that is utrefos, a trefa. Trefa is one who has 18 fatal defects that would not let the animal normally live out a year. So you only know that most of the time after you saw the animal. Most of them are internal problems. So you slaughtered an animal, perfect, 100% kosher slaughtering, perfect. You open up, you see the lungs are totally damaged. So then that's called a trefa. So it's a separate avera. You have a nevela. Nevela was not slaughtered. It didn't die with a kosher slaughtering. Trefa means that it had a kosher slaughtering, but it was a trefa. Or certain types of bugs and insects. Skutzim uramashim. Abominable creatures and crawling creatures. Okay? So what are they? So that's a generic term that includes all prohibited species that multiply by the male-female union. So interesting. Let's say unkosher fish, unkosher birds, insects, reptiles, and rodents. It's a male and a female get together, and that's how they reproduce. So those are called shkutzim. Torah says you're not allowed to eat them. There's this week's parsha. The pig is called shkutzim. Okay? A shkutz really means abomination. It's an abominable creature. Rimasim, you also can't eat them, but those more swarming things, those are creatures that seem to produce spontaneously. Although we don't agree with that, but it doesn't come out from a straight union, as it were. So different types of bugs and things like that don't really come out of a union of male and female. So they're remoshim. It's just two different types of not kosher foods. Okay, next, we got another three lines. Ochal tevel, person eats tevel. Tevel means the crop that grew, that the proper tithes were not given. All right? We know that before you can eat it, you have to separate truma for the Kohen, Maaser Rishon for the Levi, Maaser Sheni, you have to take your Yerushalayim and eat there in 4 out of the 6 years, and Maaser Ani in 2 out of the 6 years. So now, that's 22% or so. Mm-hmm. These are the three Maasers. Until all the applicable tithes have been designated, the produce is called tevel and may not be eaten, period. Similarly, a Levi, when he gets his Maaser Rishon, he can't eat it until he gives a tenth of his, what he gets to the Kohen.
Wow.
It's called Trumas Maaser. All right? So if any of these have not been given, it's called tevel. You cannot eat tevel, and you're gonna get lashed for that. Or let's say Maaser Rishon shelo nitna trumoso. Let's say the guy skipped the step of giving truma to the kohen, and he just took off Maaser Rishon. Okay, so even though this Maaser Rishon, it's still considered tevel because there was no truma given off. So that's another agricultural problem. Or let's say Maaser Sheni, the second tithe, you have to take it to Yerushalayim and eat it there. Okay? What if you don't want to schlep it to Yerushalayim? Well, then you can redeem it. Okay, fine. What if you take the second tithe, not take it to Jerusalem, not redeem it, and eat it straight away outside of Yerushalayim, the Maaser Sheni? That is not allowed. The Hektish Shelo Niftu, or Hektish, an animal that is Hektish, that is supposed to be brought as a korban, and what do you do? Or hektish property. That doesn't have to be a korban. Hektish, I give something to the Beis Hamikdash. Anything you give the Beis Hamikdash, whatever it is. You can't use it, right? Unless you redeem it. So if something is hektish, considered holy, and it's not been redeemed, you cannot use it. Okay. Now, kama yochel mina tel v'chav, how much tevel do you have to eat to get punished? What's the minimum amount? Reb Shimon Omer Kosher. Reb Shimon says any amount, even one kernel, you'll get lashed. Chamin Omer, no. Kezayis, the standard kezayis, the amount of an olive, which is usually the case in many of the prohibitions. So now Reb Shimon says, wait a minute. Only Reb Shimon says, wait a minute, why so much? Couldn't a little bit be? Iatem, only don't you agree to me, for example, ba'ochel namol, if you eat an ant which is a very small thing, kol shehu, shuchayiv yirchayiv. So how come you can't get punished for even a kernel of tevel? Amrilo, they said, there's a different reason why an ant, you're chayev, because it's a separate prohibition. It's in its complete created form. There's a special rule. A completely created form, no matter how small it is, that is completely osur. Things that are not completed, then you need to share a kezias. So don't bring a proof from an ant. An ant is a living being. The whole living being is osur, even though it's small. Yeah. While a kernel is not a living being. While Reb Shimon disagrees. He says, no. Even one kernel is also considered in its created form. We will see, the more we'll discuss, is that why is that so? And what's the machlokes? We'll see that in the future. Okay, we did the Mishnah. Next week, we're going to get to a very big Gemara now. All right.